The Homecoming, read by Sean Campion.
Why did you call the restaurant Quentin's? Mon asked one morning at coffee break. That's his name, the guy who owns it. Brenda was surprised that the young Australian girl didn't know this. She was so bright, so quick. I thought you two owned it. Mon was very confused. You mean you could be given the push just like me? Oh, very unlike you, Brenda laughed. He knows we are reliable. You're still proving it. Does he ever come over and see the place? No, never once he got us in to run it. Sometimes he sends friends, and then lets us know that they thought it was all going fine. He must trust you utterly. Well, we send him the accounts regularly. But you know, I think he hardly reads them, Brenda said wonderingly. And I haven't heard from him for a long time. I think I'll send him a cheery message if there's time today. What makes you think there's going to be time today? There never is any other day. Mon asked as she rinsed her coffee cup and went out to check the faultless dining tables in Quentin's restaurant. By chance, Quentin's father came into lunch that day. He has now retired from the accountancy practice, where he had always hoped that his son would succeed him. Distanced and confused by the boy's wish to go abroad and paint, he was grimly pleased that the dream of being a great artist had somehow eluded his son. "Do you hear any news from Morocco?" Brenda asked quietly, as she settled the older man at his table. "You'd hear more than I do," Quentin's father grunted. "Absolutely not. He's the employer you dream of. Not a word, except a raise at Christmas. No wonder we get arrogant, Patrick and I, and think we own it ourselves." "By rights you should own it. Didn't the pair of you make it what it is?" "No, your son had the dream, the idea. We just helped him carry it out."
Brenda and Patrick Brennan would never have been able to raise the capital to buy the place, but it didn't matter. As long as Quentin lived his peaceful life in the hills of Morocco and let them at it, they had no worries. Sometimes they wondered what would happen if Quentin should die suddenly. Still, every day they worked there, their reputation increased. Brenda and Patrick Brennan would not be long unemployed in Dublin. She wished that Quentin would come back just for a week, sit at the discreet table in the booth, and see how the restaurant that bore his name carried on while he lived and painted in the hot African sun. She would telephone Quentin this very afternoon. He was having his early evening mint tea served in a glass held by a metal container. One of the little boys in Fatima's corner shop brought it along at 5:30 every evening. Quentin had an urge to go home. Just to see, was it home? Or another country? A different world? That was the moment she rang, the cool, unhurried voice of Brenda Brennan. They had just served 120 spectacular lunches. His father had been in. One of the staff, Mon, the laughing Australian waitress, could not believe that they didn't actually own the place themselves, and there was a Quentin. "Did you tell her I'd be no good to her?" he laughed, as he always did about his sexuality.
"No, I did not. And anyway, she doesn't want you. She's landed one of our most prestigious customers from the bank next door."
He didn't ask why Brenda called.
"I was thinking, would you like to come back for a visit, Quentin? Just sit and observe us secretly. We'd love to show off for you."
"You're psychic, Brenda. I was just thinking of it." They fixed a date. It was for 2 months' time.
"I'll leave it to you to tell your father about your plans."
Brenda was diplomatic. "Thank you. I'll take my mother to choose a hat one day, and I'll probably call father the day before I leave. Less is best. Do you feel that too about families?" Quentin was always polite and never intrusive. Nobody minded answering any of his direct questions.
"Well, my parents are mainly fine, but then I always had plenty of sisters to share them with, unlike you. Sort of share the load."
"Yes, there was just me. A big disappointment to them both."
"Your father's in here very regularly, Quentin. He can't be all that disappointed in you. In fact, he boasts of being your father."
"Imagine." There were very bitter tones in his voice.
"Will it just be you?" Brenda asked.
Once there had been a delightful young man, Qatar. "I'll be on my own," he said.
I'll make sure Patrick has something from our poor imitation of Moroccan cuisine when you come, she promised. We do a nice orange and cinnamon salad with a chicken tagine, but it's not quite exotic enough. Probably quite exotic enough for Dublin, Quentin laughed. You have been away for a long time, she said. She talked to Patrick about it that night. Oh, you should have said couscous, he complained. He'd know we were trying at least. He's not coming home to examine the food, Brenda said. What for, then? I don't know. She didn't know. It seemed too fancy to say she thought he was coming home to say goodbye. He came in exactly on time and smiled warmly as he was introduced to the staff. A tall, slight man, 40-something, still handsome, tanned, but tired-looking. Brenda made sure that Quentin had two kinds of bottled water. She sensed he would not drink wine. She ordered a tray of appetizers, something he could pick from. She had seen enough people come and go to know that he was not going to eat very much. Quentin Barry was a sick man. Qatar had said the restaurant had been given to him by God, some vague Irish god who knew Quentin was unhappy and wanted him to have a business that would eventually give him the funds to go out to Morocco. But then Qatar was the sunniest person Quentin ever knew. Ever had known. It's so good for me I have you to look after me, to tell me stories in the dark night. Who will do the same for you? Ah, there's plenty who will. Quentin had put cold rose water on Qatar's hot brow. Well, you must go find them. Be ready to ask them. Let them know you need help. Not the false braveness. Swear to me. I will know. I will be looking at you. I swear, Qatar, Quentin had said. No false braveness. But oddly, when the time did come, Quentin didn't need any friend. He just looked at the beauty of the hot country he had come to think of as his own. Lying calmly and resting there brought him peace. Life didn't seem so huge and important somehow. You were just part of a process, like mountain ranges and sandstorms and the blossoms that came in springtime. Next week, he would be back there, and he would wait. It would not be frightening. But first, he had decisions to make here. About his father and mother, there would be few problems. They had already said goodbye to him in a meaningful sense long, long ago. What worried him was the restaurant. He would come here every day for a week, listen and learn, and surely he would know. Quentin got to meet some of Brenda and Patrick's friends. The extraordinary woman who called herself Signora, who chopped vegetables, cleaned brasses, spoke flawless Italian, was going to marry a divorced man at her age, and confided to Quentin that she had the happiest life of any human on the planet. There was Blouse Brennan, the sort of slightly slow-witted brother of Patrick, who explained on day one that he was Blouse because when he was a kid, he had thought that shirts were blouses. An easy mistake, Quentin had said. Apparently not in the school that Blouse had attended. Quentin met all kinds of people that he never knew existed in old Ireland. There were Tom and Kathy, who ran a catering service. Sometimes they did outside catering for the restaurant's clients, so they were in and out a lot. They came to tell Brenda that they were expecting a baby. There was a lot of kissing and hugging and a bottle of champagne. But Quentin saw the sad look on Brenda's face when they had gone. Was that something you would have liked? He asked gently. Oh, yes, so much. And Patrick would have been a wonderful father. Still, there have been compensations, he asked hopefully. This restaurant is our baby, Brenda said, looking around the place very proudly. He smiled, and suddenly she realized that perhaps she had been presumptuous. Oh, I didn't mean to suggest anything except that we've loved working here, she said, flustered. Why shouldn't you come to see how well it's all going? I told you we wanted to show off. Her eyes were too bright. She knew all right. I'm dying, Brenda. I wanted to know what to do with the place. Mother, can I take you out and buy you a hat?
Quentin asked on the phone. I'm not going out to some awful souk in Marrakesh. I'm in Dublin, Mother.
That's good. She didn't sound excited or pleased.
So? So of course I'd love a hat, Sarah Barry said.
She didn't say she would love to see her son, but then she didn't know he was dying.
Did you know that Quentin's in Dublin?
Sarah asked her husband that night. No, but he'll call from the airport before he leaves. That's what he usually does.
Derek Barry barely looked up from his newspaper. That's because you have nothing to talk to him about, she criticized.
Yes, that's true. Unlike you, who can compare the shades of lipstick with them after all, Derek said bitterly.
See what I mean? Ready to pick a fight where none exists.
Oh, my fights with Quentin are long over, Derek Barry sighed.
What about your friend Qatar? Brenda asked, unaware of her tear-stained face.
He went before me last year, Quentin said.
Thank you for remembering his name.
Who would forget him? He was charming.
He liked it here. We sat at this table, and Qatar said that if the poor and the sick could only eat great food like this, they would surely get well. Or at any rate, they would die happy.
They laughed at the memory of the handsome, laughing Moroccan boy, unafraid to face death, full of optimistic philosophy to the end.
Well, that's what you could do, Quentin. Sell this place as a going concern, and with the money you get, set up a kind of charity. Very high-quality food for those who would not have been able to afford it.
I can't sell the place from over your heads. You and Patrick have made it what it is, Quentin protested.
We'll get employed. Our name is good.
But it's like your baby, you said.
There are other babies, Quentin. But Blouse and Signora and everyone will also survive. Isn't there enough in the business to do both? Keep this place going and the other? Asked Quentin.
And of course there can be. Do you ever read those accountants' reports? Now they're always saying you should expand.
But you'll want money for medication, for clinics, for whatever.
No. No, I'll go back to the house where Qatar and I lived. That is best. And his face looked much more peaceful as they talked about practical things.
Blouse brought them dates, honey and nuts. Figures were written down on paper.
Quentin Barry was selling his enterprise to Brenda and Patrick Brennan, who would pay him so much a year. He explained that it would be a once-only payment, and then the money would be paid to a company called The Kindness of Qatar. At the end of the week, lawyers had been in and out of the private dining booth, and everything was signed. Quentin Barry had bought his mother an elegant hat and told her that she had the finest cheekbones in Dublin. He had taken his father for a long walk out by the sea and commented on the elegant boats and the good state of the Irish economy. He held their hands a little longer than usual when he said goodbye, but not so much longer that they might get suspicious. And when he left the restaurant, he hugged Brenda and Patrick as if he never wanted to get into the taxi. If anyone was close enough, they would have heard him say that he too had a baby, and that he was leaving it in good hands.
Quentin's and Qatar's, Brenda said.
In very good hands, said Patrick Brennan, as the taxi door finally closed.